Welcome everyone to a new episode of Straightforward. I'm here today with Miguel Premoli, HR executive that has an intense career in retail and CPG. Welcome Miguel.
Thank you Bruno, great to be here.
I'm super excited for the conversation today. Miguel has an extensive experience in HR, and as we know, one of the key components of any kind of digital transformation is the a different way to operate, and mainly a kind of big migration towards cross-functional teams and so many different things that need to be put in place there. And usually, you know, I have to confess, like usually HR is the one that's a blocker in that process. It's the one that actually enforcing the old ways of thinking, you know, in terms of hierarchy and, you know, in job descriptions, there are two prescriptive and, you know, individualized goals, like a lot of things that actually play against, you know, the more high level goals, kind of across functional goals in terms of, you know, in more like shared goals. So there's a lot of discussions when we started digital transformation with the HR team. And I was really amazed when I start reading your articles and content and saw an ally on you, like, you know, this is someone in HR that actually understands what needs to be done. So I really wanted to, you know, to understand where actually that journey, like where that understanding came to fruition, like when we actually kind of figured out, like, hey, this needs to be different. We're kind of living that there's a different need out there that we need to adjust to. So I really, where that kind of a realization when that happened.
So when I look back at, you know, I have like 30 years of HR, that tells you my age, but the field has not evolved. And if you look back at, you know, most of the tools we're using today, you know, performance management is an example. All those tools were invented in the 50s in large corporations that could make investments in terms of behavioral sciences and come with tools. And what happened is those tools were invented in the kinds of GEs and others, and then smaller firms, oh, if these big companies are doing this, we should do this. And then European firms said, well, if American companies are doing this, we should be doing this. And unfortunately, it became like a very common playbook to have, like you say, you know, job descriptions. First, the concept of there's a job, which I think it's an old concept, but, you know, as you look down and break tasks, okay, you have a job description, you need to have salary structures, you need to have performance evaluations. But that playbook was invented 70 years ago in organizations that were very hierarchical, where you had lots of levels and where the relation between the employee and the organization was a relationship for life. You know, I'll keep growing and growing and growing, and then one day I'll retire. Now you fast forward 70 years and the world is completely different. Organizations are shaping differently, but unfortunately the HR playbook is kind of caught in between. I'm not the first one to say that there's a lot of debate, should we have performance management, yes or not? There's a lot of debate of what tools you should have. So my first, you know, realization is, hey, there shouldn't be one playbook. You need to have a playbook that applies to the business strategy. And probably most likely our playbook is old.
That's a very important point, Miguel. Like, I think that's one of the most important realizations there, which is, you know, to acknowledge that the frameworks and the playbooks of the past, they won't get us, you know, where we need to be in this world, which is way faster moving, way more, you know, unpredictable, right? So that we need to give people, you know, the power and the teams in the front lines to actually, you know, to make decisions in a different way than just kind of, you know, information goes up, someone makes decisions, and that kind of rolls back again to the front line. Like, so there's the shift of power that needs to be made, kind of a more autonomy to the team, so they actually in the forefront of the action, they can make decisions and pivot and you know, align with an overall strategy, but with way more you know, wiggle room to actually, you know, make decisions and do things, right? So instead of you know, everything, you know, become a, you know, the like a feedback or suggestion box that are filtered through thousands of those, and some of them will kind of go through the beauty contest of know, which ideas should we invest, and trickles down again. So that's that cycle that takes like 3 to 5 years to make anything happen, right? So companies cannot afford to do this. And as you said, like, unfortunately, there's not a kind of a, like, the new playbook is not there, right? So if you look at all the things that are inspirations for this new playbook, they are all inspirations, right? So you look at all the agile movement and design thinking, and, you know, they're all inspirations there, but they're more like philosophical, and you don't have like, oh, this is the, you know, the best practice in how you do this. We're building this this new book of knowledge right now together. And this is what I find exciting about this conversation here. Like, we've been trying to do this in the last, you know, 10 years. You've been in this journey as well. So maybe like, if you can tell a little bit about your experience in facing, like, what are the main challenges? Like, what are the main things that you feel like people didn't understand yet? Like, I don't, what are the main mind shifts that people need to go through to actually start, you know, building things in the right way?
I would say first, Bruno, the acknowledgement that we are writing the playbook as we go, you know, and there's not going to be a magic playbook. And there are, like you say, sparks of ideas like design thinking, agile, but let's not all jump to the boat that that's the solution, because that's probably a part of the solution and will evolve, you know. So I'm also very aware of some of the, you know, kind of latest flavor of the month, you know, that you start seeing in LinkedIn or in business books, and everybody jumps to that boat. It might be a bit of the answer, but it might not be all the answer. We've tried several things. One of the things I always try to put more emphasis is in teams. You know, I heard once this phrase, this is a century of teams, and I'm a true believer. I mean, you and I can do as much as we can based on our teams. And most of the HR playbook and organizational playbook is based on individuals. So an individual has a job, has a manager, performance is measured individually, rewards are individual. And most of the work now is done by teams or by projects. So what I try to do is always bring the team component to the discussion, whether it's in, you know, compensation discussions, in how you align, et cetera, but also helping leaders make great teams and checking the health of teams. There's a lot of work we can do in building better teams, in checking the health of teams, in ensuring team members know their roles and have the right team leaders. I think there's a whole area there, 4 or 5 things that we could do much, much better. And sometimes there's things you would need a team and some things you won't need a team. But I think we have to invest more on that. We did that in one of the organizations. It was successful in one area and it was not successful in another. And, you know, that's how you write the playbook.
Yeah, and the one kind of a big conflict that we see, like, you need to give, like, to give that autonomy, you need to have, you know, higher level goals. Like, we tell our clients, like, hey, if you're right now or in September, kind of almost getting to October, a lot of people are doing their budgets and their scorecards for next year, right? So, like, if you have your, you know, if in October, November this year, you know exactly what you're going to do in 2023, you know, all the projects that you're going to decide now. So what sort of autonomy have you to do anything different next year? You have zero autonomy, right? So that same thing with teams. Like, if you're really empowering your teams to actually, you know, be customer centric and launch new products and hear feedback from customers and pivot and be able to actually do things that will kind of impact the customers in a way shorter cycle, you can't decide right now what you're going to do next year. So you have to be like way more, you know, way kind of a goal, way higher in your goals to give that, like, the what's, how exactly you're going to get there. It has to be left to the teams, right? So, but then the kind of the most classic conflicts, like the higher the goals, the more people need to share those goals, right? So sometimes we get to the situation where we have like 3-4 executives, like people really high up, people kind of sharing one very high level goal, and then there's the whole, as you said, like as the paradigm today is an individual base and not a team base, right? So you kind of fall into the traps of thinking, okay, but how I individualize those, that who's actually contributing to that goal? Like, how I'm going to recognize people, right? So if you've been through those challenges before, I just wonder like how actually, if you've seen them, like how you solve them. And actually the fair question is like, although most of the goals and the way we structure and empower people is actually in a way of teams, individuals need to be recognized as well. Like there's a conflict, intrinsic conflict there, like how people perceive their rewards and recognition in that process, and how do you kind of solve for them?
Absolutely. And I think that's a key dilemma. You know, you'll always be in the dilemma of the team or the individual. And that's a dilemma, you know, like anything in life. But what good leaders are there to solve these dilemmas, you know. And everything is going to be situational, whether you need to focus on the team or in the individual. So it's not one or the other. I think it's a combination of both. But you need to be very creative. And the best thing you can do is train managers and leaders to manage that, you know, dichotomy of the individual and the teams. I think it's always a kind of fair balance that you need to look at. But also you need to look at teams constantly and see, and teams need to renew, and teams might be working, might not be working. So there's a lot of, let's call it, capability building to work in teams as well, which I don't think in the last 20, 30 years we have helped people do. So that's probably a bigger investment even.
Got it. Yeah, that's a balance. Here at CI&T, for example, we try to kind of strike that balance. We do this like all the goals and like the way we structure the teams are all like the goals are all shared across teams, but individual recognition is also like people will tell not what they did, but what their team did, and they will try to kind of highlight what their contribution was. And one thing we did was actually kind of that presentation, right? So it's kind of very fluid and open format, but the team has to approve, like the team has to validate when people are claiming that that's what their contribution, the team has to kind of sign off on that, like, oh, this is the team recognized that that's what you're claiming your contribution was, right? So it was a way to kind of normalize and having that dynamic, like the social dynamic going, right? So and it's not an easy one. It'll be trying for, you know, more than 10 years to kind of find striking that balance. And you know, there are tricks like this, but there's no recipe to like how to make that work. And it's always this conflict, like what's you know, the I want to be seen as an individual when I'm recognized, but I need the I myself, I need that, you know, the construct of the teams to actually have that autonomy. So actually navigate the ambiguities and the uncertainty, you know, and see where I can find the best way to make my contribution, right? So that's a much more complicated world, right? So but again, it's a when people kind of come from other companies to CI&T, like, oh, they say like, oh, this is very complex, or you know, environment that you created here, and say, you know, that there's no way to. If you try to kind of make things very predictable, like the world ways, like all the job descriptions, everything described, you're very rigid to, you know, to work in a world that's not rigid, that's a very fluid, very fast, and very uncertain. So if you yourself don't mimic in any way, you know, that fluidity inside your structures, you're not going to make it. Like, you know, it's that's no way to make it out there. Like if you don't kind of you know, fight fire with fire, I guess.
And Bruno, see, that's a good example of how you're training teams to self-evaluate. And that's a great example. One of the other stories I had is we were using a very simple digital tool to monitor team alignment and team health. So it would ask team members, you know, three questions every week, team leaders, and then you could see in a dashboard which teams were doing better or worse, and you know, learning from one to other. So I think it's going to be a little bit of trial and error. And there are some tools that are coming also that are easy to deploy and to test team performance. But again, I think we need to invest more in building that capability or creating certain tools like the ones you just mentioned.
In your experience, how the introduction of those new practices, and How have you actually done this, Miguel? You've done like small teams and experimenting things, or more like a big alignments and try to kind of push big things like to the whole company? Like, what are the strategies that have you used to introduce change, right, that were successful?
I would say that in larger organizations, when I work in larger organizations, I always went with a pilot. You know, I always thought that for a big organization, having a pilot, a control pilot, where you can see, test, run things, and see if it works or not, for an organization is a lower risk. So I always choose a pilot. But I don't choose a pilot of people that want to do it. I choose a pilot of people that want to do it and people that don't want to do it. So you can get the feedback from the supporters, but also from the skeptics. No? The other thing I've always done is ask, why are we doing this? You know, what are we trying to solve? Or what opportunity are we trying to tackle? Because many times when you put tools or processes, you just are doing it because others are doing it, or because you heard about it, or because you read a book. But what problem are we trying to solve? And what is the output that is going to be different? So I think if you, like you say, you know, you put it at a higher level and say, what different output do we want? What are we trying to solve? Then it's easier to command some of these new initiatives.
That's a great tip, like, and one that we kind of keep reminding our clients. Some of our clients like come to us and say, hey, I wanted to do an agile transformation, or like, and we ask why, and they go, I'm doing it because everybody's doing it, right? So that's not the right answer. Again, what exactly are you expecting out of this, right? So because that's the best way to communicate people what we need to achieve and how we're actually going to measure progress, you know, if we're kind of actually, you know, going to the right direction there. Like, otherwise, anything goes. Just check a number of boxes. Yeah, we're running agile, right? And we're good.
The other thing that I always do is I tell people that it takes time. Because I think organizations are naturally impatient. So I tell them it takes time. If we're going to do a pilot, we need X, Y amount of time, because for things to change, you need to give them time. That's, organizations need to digest change and individuals need to embrace change, and that takes time. So my two things are, I try to do a pilot, ask what are we trying to achieve, and then it takes time. I like your prior session where they said that, I don't know, only 30% of digital transformation is done, and it will take 10 years for the rest of the 70%. But if you ask many organizations, they believe they have already done it. So many of these organizational changes are going to take many, many, many years. I think there are a lot of new organizations that are being built up, and those probably have more opportunities of organizing themselves differently, no? Rather than breaking, you know, older structures that exist in current companies.
And Miguel, like, and still, as you mentioned, to that number there, like 70% of the transformations actually failed. And where we sit here, it's one of the biggest like root causes for that is really, you know, overlooking the human factor there, like, and thinking that we can, you know, just dump all these new things on people and they will pick it up, you know, overnight, like, oh, which I think is the big mistake there is taking the behavior change that needs to be in place by skills, not something that you can train, you know, go to a classroom and be trained and lead a team that way. Like, it's not a 3-day course, like, you know, it's where you can be a Scrum Master, certified Scrum Master in 3 days. You go to the course, it's 3 days only. You're not going to be an agile leader or a digital product leader with 3 days, because I think people confound skills with behavior change, right? Mm-hmm. So, and what our understanding of the field is, like, the years that take is actually the behavior change that needs to be in place, right? So, and that just cannot be done overnight, right? So, and there's a kind of a lack of awareness for that. Like, it looks like people want to believe that that's a skill incorporation. Like, well, let's just, you know, here are the new playbook, let's train them, you know, next Monday just fly from the nest, you know. Yeah. you've been to the flight course, just go and fly.
Absolutely. And I always have this dialogue about one thing is skills, The other thing is knowledge. The other thing is behavior. So it's like a ladder. I can train you on how to, I can tell you how to ride a bicycle in 5 minutes, but probably riding a bicycle for the first time, it will take you weeks. And then if you're a safety driver or not, that behavior is ingrained on, you know, your belief. So I think behavioral change takes a lot, but under behaviors, it's a mindset. So one of the discussions I think that are important is discussions about mindset, because the way we behave is through our mindset. So you might believe that you trust people and you should empower people, but maybe my mindset is different. But we never have those conversations. We probably have conversations at another level. And I think in senior teams, where I have had these mindset conversations and understand where is this person coming from, helps them define the behavior. So it's a thing about mindset and behaviors.
Yeah, but the biggest trick is like how to change mindset. Like if it's a mindset mismatch, what do you do to actually change a mindset that really affects your behaviors? Right?
I don't think it's important to change the mindset. It's important to expose it and then agree on a shared compromise. So I believe that you should empower people and you believe that you should empower people. Okay, but let's put the mindset out there and let's confront them. And then let's agree on, okay, but this is what we're going to do, although we have different mindsets. I think we never confront mindsets, and that's probably, that's the driver of individual behavior at the end.
Yeah, you're right. Like the mindset, I can take mindset like culture, like company culture, like what we believe, like what the intrinsic beliefs that are there, that are so ingrained that people don't even realize that they're there, right? So and what's funny, like in this pandemic, I think if one good contribution of the pandemic was actually that people were kind of they had to confront some companies, very traditional companies, that kind of didn't trust, quite frankly, so their employees to empower them, right? They had to do it, right? Because no one was kind of seeing anyone work, right? They had to empower people over the pandemic to do work remotely. And, you know, I think that was a very positive thing. I think like I just have to do it and see that, you know, things, you know, people were actually there that could be empowered and you know, and have their own times and do things on their own. They don't need people on their shoulders looking at what they're doing, right? So I think that was a great, you know, push to the right direction in terms of this movement of empowering people and let them actually take more decisions and take more control of what they need to do. So that was, I think, it's a great thing.
And I think that was great, and it triggered one conversation that I think is important, which is where work needs to be done. But I think that two additional conversations, and it's what we were talking about, is what work needs to be done and who will do it. No, so I think we're in a great conversation about where do we work, but actually what is the work going to do be and who's going to do it. I think if we can probably tie those three conversations, that's a way of changing organizations and change the way we do our jobs.
Yeah, that's the problem of the future. And where do you think we're going with the whole remote work? Like now we stop talking about, you know, the real problems. Like let's look at your crystal ball there, and like what do you think we're going with all the remote work and the hybrid world going forward?
I think, you know, it's all test and learn. I mean, And that's where we sometimes think the book is written. And no, we're still writing that book, I think. And many companies are doing test and learn. And, you know, it will depend on the nature of the role, or it will depend on the nature of the task of the industry. But, you know, telework is here to stay. Most of the companies are now offering hybrid work. Is it good? Is it bad? Do we need to socialize more? You know, do we miss things? There's a lot of debates, but they're not going to be solved in the next year. It will take time. I think at the end, what you need to do is keep an open mind, test and learn, and think on things. It's a little bit like design thinking, you know. Let's make our minimal viable proposition for teleworkers. Let's test it. Let's try it again. And I think that's how you can improve work processes as well.
Cool, Miguel. I think we're going to see a lot of new things coming up with this new world in the next years. will be fun. Miguel, thank you so much for, you know, for sharing your knowledge, your wisdom here with us. Looking forward to connecting with you, you know, in the next one. Like that kind of, I think we didn't kind of exhaust the theme here. So it's endless.
Anytime. Very happy to speak with you, Bruno. Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you. Thank you so much.